What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast, back at it again, recording this podcast Monday afternoon, almost dinner time, and there's really no way avoiding this. It won't be necessarily a normal podcast. I can't just talk about football. In about 30 minutes from now, the city in which I live in will be mandatory curfew because of the looting that has gone on. It happened last night where I live. It's gone on just in the greater Bay Area in California for the last, I think, 48 hours, Saturday night and then Sunday night. And it's just, you know, these were unprecedented times. This isn't necessarily with the George Floyd situation, which I'll get into in a second, but the corona pandemic is, something I don't think any of us have ever experienced. We've never been locked down for 70 plus days, which I think was the number in the middle of last week. And it's a subject I've attempted to avoid in the sense of like giving my own thoughts on where the corona stands with myself, because it changed on a daily basis. Like anyone, I'd have good days where it's like, you know, no big deal, we'll just do what we're told. And other days, like anyone, when you're locked inside, to get frustrated. And one thing was clear when George Floyd was, I think, listen, everyone that I associate with, or hopefully do, I think would 100% agree, was an innocent man was murdered that had no business losing his life, and hopefully justice is served with the police officer that's now in jail as well. The powder keg of just the racial undertone that's been really my entire life, and I'm 35 years old, anyone older listening, it's been like that in America since well before I was born, that the corona aspect of it, people locked in, there is a class warfare situation. I can only speak for the state of California, where I've spent the majority of my life. There isn't really a middle class anymore. And the poverty levels are growing at historic rates in California, and the rich live in these areas and don't allow poor people in. It's really that simple. And there was just a bubbling in general. I wouldn't even say racial. I would just say financial and economical in the state in which I live in. And the George Floyd situation, which I don't see how as a human being you could watch that and your heart not hurt. And the situation that then followed, which was really powerful. You know, it turns out Steven Jackson, the former NBA player, really good friend of him, peaceful protests or just protests. And I always understand people push back with protests. I don't tell, like, it's not my job or anyone's job to tell someone how to feel or how to think. And one thing, as I've gotten older, I've attempted to do, it's just like, I think as anyone who tries to mature, put yourself in other shoes, in someone else's other shoes, to help you better understand them. Now, there are things that I will never be able to understand about standing in the shoes of someone that's black, right? When I get pulled over, I am not worried about anything bad happening to me. I've said this before. I said it on my other podcast with Haberman today. I've been pulled over before, definitely in my 20s, and been aggressive with a police officer. It didn't cross my mind that there was a situation that could get out of control. I didn't even think that way. And that's an element that I think all of us that are white people can't relate to. I cannot relate to, though I completely understand it. And by this point in time, with videos and everything we've seen over the last several decades, but definitely the last decade with camera phones, everything we've seen, you realize, Jesus, it's a different world, you know. And I think we all understand the frustration. And I'm not a politician. I have no clue. I really, for the most part, despise politics, because as we see with everything from corona to now where we're at with the looting and everything is so divisive. I've really been thinking about this over the last 48 hours. One of the last things in this country that everyone kind of agrees with and agrees on. Now, we might choose to root for different teams, but sports does bring us together. And because of the coronavirus and literally everything is shut down in America in terms of the games, and there are no games, obviously football would not be being played, but OTAs would be going on. We would have media members going to practice interviewing these players. And sports and definitely football, but I'd say sports in general, is one of the greatest areas in this country where people from all over, poor people, rich people, middle class people, people of all ethnic backgrounds, people from all over the place, religious views, everything under the sun in a football locker room, especially now in the offseason, you got 90 guys in a football locker room. And I think we'd all agree, you put 90 people together in any walk of life, they're all going to have different thoughts and views, you know, a percentage of the 90 people. And we're not getting that. And we are getting a lot of athletes that are tweeting and are doing everything they possibly can. But because we don't have sports, there is a missing void right now in this country. And I'm not saying that it would solve these problems. And I'm not saying that if Corona hadn't existed, everything we saw over the last 48 hours would not have happened. I think it's safe to say it 100% would have. Probably everything would have been the exact same as of recording this now. And I get uncomfortable sometimes, and I was like this during Corona, and it's why I stayed away. Sometimes, for my job, Twitter is just, it's a distribution channel for me. I spend time on it because I tweet out links. I like to interact with people. It's something that kind of, when I first got involved with the media, it was a great boom. I could just talk to people, and as, you know, I went to different shows, and it was incredible. And it's clearly morphed the last several years to be an area of just hatred. And listen, I try to keep a positive mindset. And if you just, Corona was definitely like this. If you just spend all day on social media, which I've never had more time on my hands than during Corona, you literally can't even go anywhere. It's easy to get angry. It's easy to get frustrated. And it's easy to kind of get into a bad mindset. Now, there is no disputing that when you see what happened to George Floyd, how, you know, if you have compassionate bone in your body, how you're going to feel. Now, there is a level of, and I've seen so many people tweet about this, so many different athletes, Carl Banks, the former New York Giants linebacker who, you know, played with Belichick in Parcells and next to LT, was just tweeting the one thing, the peaceful protesters, they're like two entities right now, the people that want to peaceful protest for what is right. And then you have this smaller percentage of these looters, which in my mind are criminals, that don't care about George Floyd at all. And because of the way, you know, videos explode and violence and destruction, they garner way more, you know, just views. I mean, that's what the television puts on. It's what goes viral on the internet. And it's a crazy place. I don't even know what else to say. And I feel terrible. And basically what Carl Banks is, this is how you get a race war. Because these people start being, you know, almost pigeonholed, the looters and the criminals, that they are part of the protests that are taking place. And in my opinion, and again, this is just my opinion, they are not. They have nothing to do with it. They are going to Target to steal things. They don't care about George Floyd at all. Yet they take away from the message of everyone that's, you know, Steven Jackson was ahead of this last week when it turns out, you know, he was tight with George Floyd and he went right to Minnesota, and everyone all around the country who has been doing this for years, every time these tragic incidents take place, that stand up and try to draw a line in the sand for change, and then you get the crazies. And at least from my viewing, and I've had to turn off the TV just because it's hard to watch some dude take a hammer to a 90-year-old lady's, you know, window and take out some business. Like, it's not productive, and it's really doing nothing. It's just making the situation worse. It's making, you know, a place like the city I live in have to shut down because none of these businesses want to get lit on fire. What are you lighting them on fire for? Not for George Floyd. And it's just, I don't necessarily have the answers. You know, I always try to treat everyone as well as possible. Hell, the older I get, I try to even be more cognizant of being just nicer to everybody. You know, being more patient with people. And I'm a sports guy. I got my career started in this business working at Fresno State, a program that definitely was, I mean, a large majority of our team weren't just African Americans. They were coming from low income situations. And Coach Hill was, and I've always thought this with football in general, the coaches you're around, it never comes up. I've never heard a racial statement, we shouldn't do this because this guy is this color, or we shouldn't take this guy because of this. If you can play, you're in. It's a great meritocracy, and the NFL is definitely like that because there's way more money on the line. And coming to the media, when I did, you know, 7-8 years ago, it became, and just in general, it's a big talking point. And some people in the media use race as a huge part of their platform with a lot of their angles of what they talk about, which sometimes are justified, like right now, and George Floyd and the situation. In past instances, I completely get it. And then there's consistently always interwoven when draft stuff happens, and I just scratch my head, having been on the other side in these draft rooms where I go, I don't see that. And been in the lunchroom with all these players and go, you know, sometimes you look back, some of the most compassionate people I was around were just when you're in the lunchroom, whether it's at Fresno State or with the Philadelphia Eagles, with the entire team. And this gets back to my original point about sports not being around, whether it's basketball, whether it's baseball, definitely football, just the power and the platform every time quarterbacks talk, every time guys like Richard Sherman talk, every time guys like Russell Wilson, whoever it is in the league that's powerful, they would be at practice right now. And they would be up on the podium and talking and together with their teammates. And we miss that right now. And clearly, if you look at the timelines of baseball, basketball, I mean, football, the OTAs are off, are just not coming back. And it's just, I don't know what else to say. It's just a sad time in American history. I hope everyone can stay safe. I hope everyone can treat people the right way. And, you know, I have faith we always find a way to get through this, but get through this in a way that, you know, people feel justified that we make changes, and also that, you know, we don't ruin innocent people's lives, you know. And I mean, when I see a video of George Floyd's brother getting on a megaphone saying, "What is everyone doing? My brother was a peaceful individual." You know, it just makes you scratch your head, and it goes, it's just a time in history in 2020 where it's just there's so many messages from coming from so many places, and you feel uneasy just about, you know, the future and definitely the immediate future. Like, how's this going to end? There's not really a light at the end of the tunnel, even with Corona. You know, it's like, are we just in the clear now? Is it kind of over? Is it, you know, there's still that elephant in the room. Like, what if it comes back in the fall? Hell, I don't know. I'm just a ag business kid from Cal Poly. I got no clue. To read the articles like you do. I mean, it doesn't feel like anyone knows. And then this situation is just, you know, a powder keg that feels a little out of control because a small percentage of people get all the pub for the rioting and the looting when the large majority of people want to do the right thing and just want to have their message heard, that we're just, you know, kind of on this slippery slope of madness, which hopefully we can come out of sooner than later. Okay, let's dive into some NFL stories. Let's just see if we can talk a little football. One story that broke earlier today was Henry Ruggs, the Raiders' top pick in this draft from Alabama. There was kind of a vague tweet from the Raiders, actually. Vic Tafer tweeted out a statement that they were monitoring the rumors of Henry Ruggs being involved in an accident. The Raiders are aware of the report regarding an off-the-field injury to Ruggs. Respecting Henry's right to medical privacy, the team will not be commenting on the report. And Rap Sheet, see if I can pull up the Rap Sheet tweet, basically said he had some sort of gash on his thigh, and I'm told he's okay. While he was apparently cut or received a puncture, the wound is not serious. During these Corona times, and these teams haven't been able to see their players, you know, there's the month of when the OTAs end in the middle of June. Really, depending on the team, this might have been the last week of OTAs. And then you usually kind of reconvene. It's the great part about the NFL. You get a summer break. It's usually like 6 or 7 weeks. the irony is, like, they've been on break now, really since the draft, not being able to do anything. At least, like, scouts and GMs, even coaches are just working a couple hours a week, or, I mean, a couple hours a day with their players. That's all they can do. Is you just kind of keep your fingers crossed, nothing bad happens, right? No one gets arrested. No one gets hurt working out. No one does anything. So when I saw this headline, I said, oh, my God. Because you just think, did something serious happen? Well, if he just has a puncture wound and everything's going to be okay. But as a Raider, if you're a Raider fan, now this is different. But last year, I'll never forget when they traded for Antonio Brown and OTA started. The Raiders would, I wasn't allowed at practice, but I would see it. I was banned, for those of you new to this podcast. They banned me long ago. Not a friend of the Raiders management. Though I like Mike Mayock and don't know Gruden, but he entertains me. That when OTA started and Antonio was there, and it turns out, you know, he was going through all the helmet issues, but he was dominating practice. He looked like, you know, if you go to Henry Ruggs or Josh Jacobs or anyone that goes to Alabama, just type in any Alabama player of the last like 10 years, especially an offensive skill guy, a running back or a wide receiver, type in their high school highlights to YouTube. They look like a video game compared to the other high school kids. That's what Antonio Brown looked like against the Raiders in practice. They couldn't touch him. I was like, oh my God, this guy is going to go nuts this year. And then he shows back up at training camp with the bad feet in an air balloon. And it was obviously a couple weeks later, he was cut. So that was a disaster. Now, I'm not saying this by any means is that, but I just think if it makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up, if you're a Raider fan, you're like, oh my, not this again. Well, it feels for the time being that it's okay. George Kittle and the 49ers are far apart. I've talked about this at nauseam on the other podcast, did some YouTube videos on it. It's a complicated situation. Tight ends are the most underpaid position in the league, the good ones. They've never made big money. Amari Cooper got $60 million guaranteed. The highest paid tight end in NFL history was $22 million guaranteed to Austin Hooper. So if you're George Kittle, you can't sign. You have nothing in common with Austin Hooper. You are a better player than Amari Cooper. But the way football works, I think just the way business works, it's on comps. And in football, it's on your position comps, right? It's no different in real estate. What's this square footage relative to that house that sold for this? Well, in football, not every house is the same because the D-line houses are a lot different than the tight end houses that are different than the safety houses. And the tight end houses are by far the cheapest houses on the street. And George Kittle is a sweet house on a cheap street. And he's ready to sell for a lot of money. And I think it's just going to be a complicated situation. But the Niners do not let sweet players walk. So I don't think it's going to get too contentious and ugly, but it is a very, very complicated negotiation. He's a star. I mean, he's the best player on the team. He's a star in the NFL. Like, he's a poster boy of the NFL. He is probably one of the 7 or 8 star players, non-quarterbacks in the league. Poster child of the league. And a personality. He's kind of, you know, in a weird way, he's like the NFL's version of The Rock right now. Because he's so into wrestling. And I just, as a football fan, love watching him play. There's not much traction on the Chris Jones contract. I read a headline. I wonder, and I don't know any. I've never asked Veach or asked Andy about this. I don't know enough about how this guy is in the locker room, because he's a dominant player. When he's on the field and he's right, he can take over the game. And he did that in the Super Bowl. He took over down the stretch. Now, is it a difficult contract negotiation? Does he want Aaron Donald-type money? Do they view him like an Aaron Donald-type player? Unlike Kittle, where I know for a fact how the Niners view him, and they view him as a star. And Kittle is a star. I don't know if the Chiefs, like, I think they understand how talented he is. They were there when they drafted him. But relative to how much he's worth, I mean, if DeForest Buckner just got $21 million a year, now, he didn't get that much guaranteed. I think it was like $50 million. Might have been a shade over 50. But I would imagine Chris Jones wants $70, $80 million guaranteed. And when you got the elephant in the room of Patrick Mahomes, it's going to be a complicated situation. Also, the elephant in the room of the Chiefs, notoriously a little cheaper. And are they not going to have fans at Arrowhead this year? Are they not going to have the same revenue streams? Are they a little hesitant if they're going to give Patrick Mahomes historic money? Maybe it makes it a little more complicated. Again, no inside information. Matt Judon, the pass rusher for the Baltimore Ravens, signed his franchise tag. I've been saying it for a while. The Ravens team on paper is excellent. And they should, the OTAs for them should actually probably be a benefit, because teams in their division, in the offseason, like when I was in Philly, and I'm sure Coach Reed still does this with the Chiefs, you do periods in the offseason of just like, let's run some Denver Bronco offense against our defense. Let's have some scout team run Raiders offense versus our defense, and vice versa. So you're just kind of repping it in your division because you play those teams twice. Well, if you're the Browns, you're the Steelers, and you are the Bengals, whether they matter or not, you start kind of, you know, locking in on how you're going to defend this offense. Well, you don't have any of that. And the Ravens clearly know how to run this offense like the back of their hand. They got all their best players back, including this guy, that, you know, they're going to be really good in the regular season. Now, I'm strictly judging them on the playoffs. And Lamar's talked about it. It's why, listen, Lamar, I did not love him coming out. I've said this over and over. He was dominant last year. And I love his attitude. Because unlike society that always wants to make excuses for things, he doesn't. You know, shut up, work harder. Nobody cares, work harder. That he, I think he even said this offseason, like, I need to win. I need to play better in the playoffs. And if he they'll go as far as he'll take him. Because if he's on and he plays like the regular season, they can win the Super Bowl. If he plays like he's played in the last two playoff games, they won't. But their team on paper is loaded. JT Daniels, who was one of the biggest recruits in the country 2 years ago, went to USC, started as a true freshman. I remember watching him as a true freshman. I'm like, I don't know if I see it. He was kind of robotic. I don't know. I didn't see it. Well, then the first game this year, was it against, I think it was Fresno State. I forget who they were playing. He looked good. I was like, God, he looks a little more fluid. He looks a little more natural. And then he shattered his leg. Then the guy that ended up replacing him looked fantastic. And now he's transferring to Georgia. The college football and the transfer portal is really kind of like free agency right now. Now, the difference is he's got to sit out a year. You know, if you go to the transfer portal, unless you're able to get some crazy waiver, you're not able to play. So he was not even eligible to play this year. But Georgia doesn't, I mean, if this guy can get back to what he looked like the first game of 2019 before he hurt his leg, Georgia might have their best quarterback. I don't know who their starting quarterback is this year, but I mean, Jake Fromm, I'm not a Jake Fromm guy, but JT Daniels is a more talented player than Jake Fromm. And when you're a highly, you know, big time heralded recruit, when you go to the transfer portal, even if it didn't go as well or you're injured, you're going to have so many teams. It's not just quarterbacks. I mean, it's linemen, it's receivers. These big boys are all going to be interested because he was just, when you're a 4 or 5 star guy and every team in the country wants you, well, they're going to want you again two years later, even if you've been underachieved on tape, because these coaches believe they'll get the most out of you. And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But that's an interesting guy to follow as he goes to Georgia. Okay, let's get to the Middlecoff mailbag and see if we can talk a little more football. Easiest way to get a hold of me, at John Middlecoff, my Instagram. DM's wide open. You can slide up in there and ask any question you want. What's up, my bald brethren? Love the show, and I've been listening since your first one, but you said Mahomes didn't actually have the top end best arm in the league. I said he didn't maybe throw the fastest. He might have the best overall arm. He makes it look so easy, but yeah. Also, in the draft coverage, they had this thing when he was 17 at a county fair. I believe he had a radar on his pitch, and it was 97 miles an hour. And then in college, he threw one 96. He throws absolute lasers, and that's a lot of tweets for a guy talking about in practice being ready for blah, blah, blah. I was born and raised, still live in KC, but if you look into it, I think you'll find he's a thoroughbred and one of the best arms out there. I am not disputing that Mahomes has an elite arm. That is not my argument at all. I'm just saying that if we did the pitcher thing, and I know a lot of people have DM'd me about the pitcher analogy and thought it was cool. Again, this is, I'm eyeballing it. I don't have tangible information. I've just been watching these guys throw footballs and had a front row seat, you know, now for over a decade, and just, I can gauge arm strength. Mahomes can throw it as far as anybody. And I think when he just steps into a ball, can throw it equivalent on a baseball pitch, like 96, 97. I would say Josh Allen and maybe even Wentz may hit like 99. Now, I'm not saying those guys are better than Mahomes. Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league. He would be the one guy I would take over every single player. I would imagine everyone listening probably agrees with me, unless you're like a Seattle Seahawks fan. But I wouldn't say like Josh Allen just standing there, I think he throws it slightly harder. Again, I'm nitpicking. I was terrible at baseball. I couldn't keep my front foot. I never stepped forward. I always stepped away. Scared of the baseball? I don't know. It was just a bad instinct. I was not any good at it. Bad pitcher, too. Didn't throw hard enough. But I've been told, met some baseball players over my day, you know, just when I worked in radio, used to be able to have a lot of access to the A's and the Giants. And interviewed a bunch of them on television, or I mean on radio. We had our guests were players on the team, and they would all tell you that, and I'm sure some of you guys listening played college baseball, that it's really hard to tell the difference between 97 and 99. It's basically just fast AF. It's hauling ass. Now, there's a big difference between 97 and 92, but I think once you get like 98, 99, it's like the heat wave's coming where I live. And I was talking to a lot of people this weekend. I don't know if there's that big a difference between like 102 and 110. I'll tell you what 102 is, hot as hell. I'll tell you what 110 is, hot as hell, a little hotter than 102. Anything over 100, you know, on the West Coast where it's dry heat is really, really hot. Now, there's a big difference between 88 and 100, but I don't know if there's that big a difference between 103 and 108. Just like I don't know if there's that big a difference between Mahomes and Josh Allen standing there throwing a football. I would just give the slight edge to Josh Allen. Love the pod. Listen to every episode. Appreciate it. If you had the power to pick any player in the league and void their contract so they could hit the open market, who would it be and why? I personally am a Cowboys fan, but I'd love to have it be Stafford. Set him free from that dumpster fire that is the Lions. I didn't quite see where you were going there. I don't hate that one at all. If I could retroactively go back, I would go Matt Stafford like 4 or 5 years ago when he was, I think when he was drafted, he was like 20, 21 years old. He's been in the league now. What year was he drafted? 08, you know, so 12 years. He's probably 32, 33 years old. If you could have got him, you know, at 26, 27, because I think sometimes when you hit his age now, he developed some bad habits. Now, he's still highly skilled, and I'm still a big believer in Matt Stafford. Your sirens in the background. That's never a great thing at, you know, 6 o'clock, and God, this is weird times. But, yeah, I would say Matt Stafford like 5 or 6 ago. If I had to go right now, you just have to pick, I would say, like Chandler Jones. I think the Cardinals are not going to be very good. Their defense is atrocious. If you put Chandler Jones on a team that was, like, on the Seattle Seahawks, or on the New England Patriots. I know he was on the New England Patriots, but like the version of him now, like the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Green Bay Packers, just a team that was competing to go to the playoffs, playing on national television a lot. I think we talk about him like Khalil Mack because just watching a lot of NFC West, Chandler Jones is easily one of the best players in the league. But when you play for the Cardinals and your team's been really crappy the last handful of years, no one's really paying attention beside like diehard NFL nuts to defensive pass rushers because they're not in the fantasy mix, right? You're not drafting a defensive end in fantasy. You draft defenses, and you're never drafting the Cardinals defense. So I think he'd be a guy for sure. Huge fan, love listening to the pod. Just wanted to know how you feel about the NFL going to two preseason games and adding the 17th game and the extra playoff team, if that would work better than what we have now. Also, what do you think of the Carolina Panthers and the team? Thanks, keep it up. Well, Matt Rhule's clearly a really impressive guy. I don't think their roster is very good. They do have some offensive weapons. You know, Christian McCaffrey. What's the other kid's name? Moore. DJ Moore. He can fly. Obviously, you know, you sign Teddy Bridgewater. They might actually be, you know, they sign Robbie Anderson from the Jets who played for Rhule at Temple who can really run. They got some elite speed. Is their defense going to be good enough? Keekly's gone. You know, obviously Thomas Davis is long gone. You'd say no. I think they could be one of the worst teams in the league. But if you believe in Matt Rhule big picture, kind of churn the roster, get his guys in there, they could be good in a couple years, especially Tampa Bay's all in right now. The Saints are kind of all in right now. Maybe in a couple years as those rosters turn over, you can take advantage. I would say the preseason games, who knows? I don't think it's a lock that we're going to play 3 or 4 preseason games this year. Wouldn't shock me if we just end up playing 2 preseason games. I'm not opposed to 2 preseason games. If I was going to do the 2 preseason games, I would make it mandatory that you do a joint practice. And maybe you can't make it, but if I was a GM, I would be pushing for two preseason games, and I would do a joint practice. Because every good coach I know does joint practices. You want to do joint practices. It's just a great way to hone your team against another team, get live reps, and really it's a more teachable moment, I think, sometimes than preseason games. Where I just think coaches now and GMs, in fairness, the money's so big, it's not worth risking guys. It's risky enough in a regular season game to lose a starter. I can't afford to lose a starter to a broken leg, to a torn Achilles, to a torn ACL, to a torn shoulder in a game in August. I can't do it. And as we've seen the last several years, less and less teams are even putting their players out there. So the games are just kind of a joke. Big fan of yours and was wondering if you could check out my NBA blog that I started a couple years ago. Got two posts up right now. Love to hear your thoughts. I'll check it out after this podcast. Actually, I'm going to eat dinner first, but keep blogging away. When anyone asks me, hey, I'm starting a podcast, I'm starting a blog, just do it. You know, just start it, push it out as much as possible on social media, and just you live and you learn, you know? The NFC North might be the most unpredictable division in the NFL. Many people think the Packers are pretenders. The Vikings are young and talented, but have a lot to prove. Agree. They lost Diggs. They lost, Everson Griffin. Cousins is just kind of a guy. They lost their offensive coordinator. The Lions are talented, but appear handicapped by the coach. Agree. The Bears are a wild card if Nick Foles catches fire under center. Rank the division 1-4. What you think will happen this season? Well, I put the Lions at 4. Then I think the next three teams can win. The Bears went 8-8 last year with Mitch Trubisky, playing atrocious football. The Packers went 13-3 last year and pulled just games out of their ass. The Vikings were just really solid, but I vividly remember two big games against the Packers and against Seattle. Kirk crumbled, and they become very, run-heavy, and when he has to make plays, especially outside of the offense, he can't. Now, their defense isn't going to be as good this year. Their pass rush isn't going to be as good this year. They drafted a corner early, but they cut Xavier Rhodes, who was bad last year. They have some unknowns on defense where they've kind of held. The Vikings have been one of the more consistent teams in the league the last 5 years. Well, now you get rid of Diggs, who, caught like 165 balls the last 2 years, and like 15 touchdowns. That's a big loss. They're expecting, if you tell me Justin Jefferson's competing to be the rookie of the year, then I go, the Vikings offense is probably dynamic. Jefferson, Thielen, Cooks. Dalvin Cook, not Cooks. But what if I tell you, Justin Jefferson is kind of like Treadwell a couple years ago. Doesn't work out. Then all of a sudden you go, well, Thielen's been banged up. What if their offense comes back to earth and their defense isn't as good? Maybe they go 8-8. The Packers, as long as they got Rodgers, I would say they're still the team to beat. I'd put them at 1. I would probably, again, you call me biased, I just think Nick Foles is a much better player than Mitch Trubisky, and I'm not even the biggest Nick Foles guy. That defense is so good. They have so much kind of cohesion with the roster. Probably be a coin flip between them and the Bears. I'd go Packers, Bears. I'd go Packers 1. I'd go Bears 2A, Vikings 2B. And listen, if you're a Vikings fan, you go, how are you putting the Vikings above the Bears? That's a lot of turnover. That's a lot of coaching turnover. The offensive coordinator, who was really good last year, you lose Diggs, you trade him away, and you're going to be depending on two rookies now, the corner and the wide receiver. You lost, you're one of the best pass rushers, of your franchise the last 20 years. It's just a lot to ask, and the Lions just stink. Again, Matt Nagy's my guy. I'm not hiding from that fact. But if you could convince me, and I'm with you, any of the three teams wins the NFC North. If Foles is good, the Bears are going to be good. If Foles is solid, the Bears are going to be good. If the Packers' offense sputters again, like maybe they struggled, get 9-10 wins instead of 13. Their offense was just not good last year. Question for the pod. Why do people constantly claim the NFC is the better conference than has been the AFC, which consistently dominated in the Super Bowl for the past 10 years? I understand a good portion of those wins are Brady, but the fact of the matter is the NFC has 4 Super Bowls since 2010. The AFC has 6. Again, Brady has 3 of them. Doesn't that quite literally make them the better conference? At the end of the day, all that matters is the big game, and the AFC has won 60% of the games in the NFC. I think when I say the AFC is not as good as the NFC, I'm not. The Chiefs were the best team in the league, and they beat what was clearly the best team in the league in the Niners. They had beat the Saints. They had run through the NFC. The Chiefs beat them. And the Chiefs will be a heavy favorite again this year. And the Ravens are really, really good. But when you look at the depth of the conference, I just don't see it as the same as the depth of the NFC. The Niners, Seattle, the Saints, now with Tom Brady with the Bucks, the Eagles, if not everyone gets injured, the Cowboys roster, like what I just talked about, the Packers, Bears, and Vikings are all really solid. When you look at the AFC, I go, well, I got the Chiefs in the AFC West. Who's the second best team in the AFC West? Drew Locke and the Broncos? Justin Herbert and the Chargers? The AFC South. I watched Rivers last year. He looked terrible. Now, I like Ballard. I like Frank. But what if Rivers is not good? The Titans, you know, got really hot. And I like Vrabel. And, you know, they should be solid. The Texans, like, I'm not counting on them to do anything in the playoffs. Roethlisberger's like 40 years old. And he got hurt last year. He missed the entire season. The Browns, they're the Browns. I like the Bills, but I mean, they blew a 19-point lead, or 17, whatever was scored in the game against the Texans. You know, the Patriots could come back to earth. The Dolphins are just not going to be that good. Neither are the Jets. You're right. Like, winning the Super Bowl matters. Winning the Super Bowl 100% matters. And the Chiefs and the Patriots, the top-end teams in the AFC are excellent, are elite. And the Patriots are one of the greatest dynasties ever. The rest of the conference, though, just hasn't been, to me, as competitive as the NFC over that time. That might change. Maybe I'm wrong. I was wondering, what do you think of Deontay Johnson? I think that he could have a breakout season this year, thanks. I would agree. I didn't know that much about him. Where's he from? Tulane. Third-round pick from the Steelers. And then you just watched him a couple games last year playing with just scrub quarterbacks. He can fly. And if Juju, who is just kind of feels like he's in weird standing right now, against in the Pittsburgh Steeler organization, if he can kind of get the train back on the tracks, maybe that offense is really explosive with him, Juju. You had Eric Ebron. You still got Vance. You know, James Conner. If Roethlisberger has, you know, one last hurrah in him, but yeah, I like elite speed guys that can make things happen with the ball in their hands. And he is one of those guys. And if you just caught him on the right game last year, and again, not all his fault playing with scrubs, you're just like, geez Louise, this guy can fly. He had 59 catches last year and 5 touchdowns. Yeah, I definitely like his talent. I appreciate everyone listening. Keep this one a little shorter today. Just weird times. Stay safe out there. Attempt to stay positive. And I'll talk to you a little later this week. Appreciate everyone listening, sharing the podcast. And again, stay safe. See you.